Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.
More V-Show with Bob Valvano is now, right here, on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Going backwards for the Americans. They now need 11.8 runs per over, 130 runs and 66 balls left. That they put. They've gone 9 overs, matches 20 overs, so they're almost at halftime, effectively. They've got 65 runs, they need 194. Going to need a big second half, needless to say. Mark Lieberman's here. I didn't even know he was out there in the hall this whole time. We could have been enjoying that's the dulcet tones of leaves. How are you? That's
my doing
fault.
Great.
That's my bad.
Sorry. You enjoying the Holy Cross?
Cougars?
I knew it was a C.
It's on the tip of your tongue.
I wanted to say Crusaders, but I knew it was a C.
Are the Cougars like a state animal for any state?
I thought they were a divorced woman who liked to date around, but I could have been. That's not it.
No, that's a different type of cougar.
Oh, sorry. That,
we've talked about
how
this.
Great a mascot would that be?
Just a hot mom.
Yeah.
Well,
this show is taking a turn.
He just started there. Let's get him fired.
I always
now.
Get you. No, I always I serve some things up for you guys, and then you just run with it.
It's batting practice. You're the batting practice pitcher. You're mm-hmm. this
the fathers of the other high schools. Yeah, I love playing against Holy Cross. It's a great time. You know, the gym's awesome.
She's fun that night.
Tread lightly.
They have
Tanner.
Really good jerseys.
Tread lightly.
Tanner's pushing the envelope there. All right. So I asked you off air, but I can tell you, I ask you again because I'm intrigued. The regulations for college and high school have changed so dramatically. Like when I was in, I don't know what it was like when you, what was it like in Florida? Could you go all year round like they do now?
Well, at Pace, I could. I don't know what everybody else
really
was doing.
Were you allowed to go around all
no,
year round?
No, that was kind of frowned upon, but like it, no, they had times and it, you had kids. What I built there and what we built there was a culture. Guys wanted to come in and they lived in the gym. As far as what's going on now, and I'm getting, again, acclimated to all the rules and whatnot, but yeah, you have a dead period coming up where it's about two and a half weeks where there's no contact with them.
But right now, you can have full practices.
Full practices. You can have, there's a copious amount of summer leagues games going on everywhere. We're not doing that because
you don't know what's going to be on your team yet.
And you also don't want to have just bad habits in the games where they're doing stuff that is not going to be accepted by us are non-negotiable. So yeah, we're just doing workouts, which has been a blast.
You can appreciate this more as much as anybody, I'm sure. The one, I don't want to say casualty, but to some degree it is the loss of the role of the five-star camps and things like that. I mean,
oh my gosh,
they've dropped off the face of the earth. When I went to five-star, I mean, it was every coach in America. It was a who's who. They came from.
I worked it.
And the talent. I mean, Moses Malone was there. I mean, in fact, not that I had anything to do with this. Whatever loses their mind, you know, God bless them. Garf would keep mm-hmm. track of everything.
Everything.
We were only the second undefeated team through the go through the whole week, and that the first undefeated team was Moses Malone.
Really?
Yes. Do you remember a guy named Jim Graziano who played center mm-hmm. for South Carolina?
Yep.
He was my center. He was from Long Island, and he was a great kid. So, I guess.
Oh, we had – you know how it was? It was shirts and skins. You're outside. The food
was
terrible.
You know who my coach was?
It was the best.
Ralph Willard.
Really?
Yes,
is that right?
Yes. I don't think he even remembered me. I was not exactly an impact player.
Well, Bob, when I worked the camp, I worked it with one of my good friends, Frank Martin. Was a counselor. He was still a high school coach. So, we're working that. You're climbing at the Robert Morris campus, you're climbing the hills. And it was a rite of passage for any coach. When Rick Pitino hired me, after he came to my first practice, his first question to me was, are you a five-star guy?
Oh, that's
so, like, and yeah, I brought brought all my players there. That was something that was real important to me. I worked it for, I think, 5, 6, 7 years consecutively. And
God bless you.
Yeah. You know, so you, it was incredible.
I went to the camp, not at Robert Morris, the original one in Honesdale.
Yeah, yep.
I lived on rye bread for the entire week because they would get kids that they wanted to come to camp and didn't really have money to pay, and they'd make them the waiters.
Correct.
And I sat at the end of the table. And they don't give a rat's ass, of course. So they would just come and throw the food at their end of the table and leave.
I think there were some rats in some
of the guys at the end would empty all the food. And I would get – I didn't take a dump for about 3 weeks after camp because all I had was rye bread and butter for an entire week. That was it.
So I kind of, you know
– fun, good times.
Do my own thing. So at Robert Morris, they actually had upstairs the deli open.
Yeah.
And they had some good food. So I would always just go off. They would, you know, I'd disappear for
a good hour or so. Yeah, they go to Robert Morris. It's a real campus. They had dorms. We were sleeping in tents in the Pocono Mountains in June. It gets to like 35 degrees. It's freezing cold. You don't get a chance to eat. You're playing on these outdoor courts. It was, it was delicious.
But see, kids these days, they're not going to do that. They're not going to go outside. They're not going to play.
We had Kelsey on the show yesterday, and he said that. He said they. When you think, because I remember doing it, the one thing Ralph did appreciate, I was willing to stand there and take a charge on concrete on the cement courts. I did, and that's what Kelsey said.
It's a badge
of
honor.
You'd see guys diving for loose balls,
definitely,
on outdoor courts, and now they won't. They wouldn't even play on those.
That's why those camps have gone by the wayside. Just
do they even have 5-star?
No, they had started doing them in college campuses, but inside I know Lee Klein is not doing is
it's Will's son.
And so I know he took over, but I don't think they're doing it anymore. And it's a shame.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was incredible.
You talk about
toughness, you talk about
for people, yeah,
building that desire for the game, that character. It was incredible.
It was on every level an institution that is difficult to explain to somebody right now, because not only did they get the best players in the country,
yes,
the best coaches working the camp, the best coaches would come and evaluate the camp, but then the networks like that that Rick would ask you a 5-star guy?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it became a network of guys. Yes. And it's amazing. If you look at staffs at that time, entire staffs were put together of connections that were made at 5-star.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned Frank, but there was 10 college coaches that were counselors,
yep,
at the time. And then you had Fratello come in and Hubie come in and, yep, everybody come in and just talk.
The lecturers. It was who's who of lecturers.
And I'm very proud of it. I got to do Station 13.
Oh, you were Station 13 guy.
I got to do it. Yeah.
There were stations like a lot of basketball camps.
Right.
And the Station 13 was kind of like the specialty, for lack of a better word.
Well, yeah, it was. And I got to, I think my third or fourth year, they gave me Station 13, which was like
pretty cool. That's what Rick used to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rick used to, but I mean, everybody there has an angle. Make no mistake about it. Rick had Station 13 because he would play one-on-one against the players. It was his way to find out
who
could really play. My brother, everybody in America was there, so you were trying to get the attention of the kids. So my brother brought in Pennsylvania, the Dodgers were playing the Pirates. My brother got Tommy Lasorda to come with him to the camp.
That's
so the kids are all sitting around for the lecture, and here comes my brother Walton in with Tommy Lasorda. And, you know, not all the kids knew, but the Dodgers were, you know, the team at that time. They'd won the pennant in 77, 78, 80 or 81, I don't remember. So he brought Lasorda in. It was like, you guys are unbelievable. Even at camp, you're competing with each other.
Well, that was the cool thing, because when I was working it, you could still have Division II coaches and the IA coaches still be counselors, but Division I coaches were no longer allowed to.
Right.
But what you're talking about, Division I coaches were the counselors, and so they could they could meet the players and talk
to
the players.
That's true.
And
so it's
interactive.
Like a free recruiting.
Yes, it was.
It's unbelievable. And there were other ones too, by the way. In fairness,
Eastern Invitational.
Do some stuff.
They
those
still
guys.
Do. Yep.
But BC, remember Bill Cronauer? He had a camp for a long time. What was the guy in Pennsylvania? Western PA. He had a smaller scouting service. We used his service because we were at smaller schools. He had a big camp too. Why can't I remember the name? Anyway. Mm-hmm. You might remember it, but all gone by the board. Then the shoe camp started to put them out of business,
yes,
right?
We kind of moved on to working those, so I got to work Nike camp and Adidas camps, because then you're spoiling the kids, and that was all part of it. But it's all, at that point, it was just all about selling shoes.
Yeah.
And so you wanted to get, because I was, LeBron James was at Nike camp when I was a coach there. And he was supposed to go to Adidas. And there was a big battle between Sonny and George Raveling, as far as that goes. And the bottom line was, it was just to get them to be.
Oh, well.
So now they got away from it, or they ended those camps because they realized, why do all this? Let's just send, when he's ready, let's just throw a huge contract at him and just make him wear our shoes.
We don't have to worry about that anymore. Yep. Joe Butler, that was the guy's name in Pennsylvania.
Gotcha.
Do you remember him? You remember
him? I don't.
He did a nice job. What do you think about people talking now about the Celtics as a dynasty? You buying into that?
Not in today's NBA.
That, that's what I said. We say that every year.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Denver. Everybody said they're going to win for the, they'll win championships over and over again, and I thought they would this year.
They didn't even make the finals.
It's tough. It's tough. What the Chiefs are doing now in football is because they have maybe the best. He could end up as the best player of all time. He really could. Their quarterback. I don't know if the Celtics have that, but you got to give credit where everybody's talking about, like Brad Stevens, what he did to put this team together.
Really did. He is.
You remember when they traded Marcus Smart? Everybody's like, oh my God, the heartbeat of the team is gone. How are they going to? And he just brings in Jrue Holiday, brings in Porzingis, brings in other guys who know their roles. And if you can find your role, stay in your role, and star in your role, then you're in business. And that's what the Celtics did.
Is his career on a path to be in the Hall of Fame?
Brad Stevens?
He takes Butler to
back-to-back, yeah.
Right, back-to-back championship games. And then he goes to the Celtics, and he was successful as a coach.
Yep.
And then he has now put together, he's orchestrated a possible dynasty as a front office guy. Might be on a path to do that.
He just doesn't know how to remove the tags from his sports coat.
I didn't see that.
Really? No, he had a tag on his sports coat?
I actually knew him a little bit. So my first year here, we opened up the Yum with Butler. That's who we played in our when they opened up the Yum Center. And I had known him previously. We knew each other. We weren't that friendly. But he walked out for the game, and he had a tag on his sports. And I told him, and he laughed and took it off.
Did he?
True story, yeah.
That's funny.
Could open up a whole new career for you. I will always be loyal to that man.
He's a good guy, though. He was really great.
And very
he's great.
Perfect fit at Butler. I had a couple. We didn't have a lot of their games, but ESPN. And we went in, and before the game, he is in the concourse, and he's just talking to the fans who are coming in. I mean, that's what
really
you know, that. Well, that's what Hinkle's about. Hinkle's
yes.
Like you feel like you're going back to the 1950s. I mean, like back then, I don't know what it's.
And we returned the game back to their place. But
I remember that.
As far as he's concerned, like you know this, like for but he's so analytical. He's such a math guy. Everything is numbers.
Yes.
And he, as much as you got to give credit to Mazzulla for handling that and almost staying out of the way of the players. But from a statistical standpoint and analytics, you watch the Celtics. They're passing up so many twos for threes, and that's how he was at Butler as well. But the numbers and where you're going to take shots from, who's going to take shots, that was a huge influence on the Celtics team. So he was very impactful.
He was an analytic guy before analytics was cool.
Yep.
Really is what it comes down to.
Because he was on Wall Street before he went back, and he was a numbers guy when he finished school, and everything for him was numbers, numbers, numbers. And talking to even former Butler players, they would talk about the fact that everything, he'd just bring in pie charts and this and that, and everything was analytical at Butler, and he carried that over, and it's the same thing at the Celtics.
It certainly has worked. What do you make of what now
a lot
is
of
the
questions.
U of L roster? Well, it's an interview segment here. what do you make of the roster for that Lil wound up with?
I think they put together a really good one, and watching South Florida basketball last year and watching Case and Pryor, I think fans are going to love him just from the standpoint of just his motor, way he rebounds out of his area, how he's a pick and pop guy. He can do a lot of things. He's going to be hard to guard. I hear people talking about, well, they don't have a guy with girth. They don't have a big guy. But you have to look at the fact that how are they going to guard the athleticism of the bigs that Louisville has?
Exactly.
And you can always double the post or front or do certain things to take away the impact of certain post players, but I love what they have, and I think they have a lot of interchangeable parts. They have a lot of got likes. So switching out of necessity or switching not just out of convenience, they can do it because they have a lot of guys who are 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", and a lot of athleticism. I think this fans are going to love this team.
Come on, you. When I'm not here, what would you be talking about? Cereal and Star Wars?
No, movies and what else?
Well, so evidently, and I haven't watched it yet, mostly because it's been absolutely panned, but Disney, not trying to hate on the mouse. We love the mouse. The mouse has been
having said that,
very good to us.
It's one of those having said that.
Yes, exactly.
We're going to start hating on the mouse because the Marvel is they're basically just I think when it comes to superhero movies, they're just kind of biding their time until they can incorporate X-Men.
We're not going to lose your dad here, are we?
No.
Okay.
So, but I'm saying
I'm drifting a bit to just
their major
listening to port a little bit.
Their major properties, you know, the Disney magical princesses and everything, and then there's the Marvel superheroes. Well, the Marvel superheroes haven't been very good for a while. So, but at least Star Wars, in my opinion, they also own Star Wars, had been pretty good. A lot of their series I thought were solid. Room for improvement, sure, but solid. But evidently, they just came out with a series called The Acolyte. And it has been
an altar boy.
It has been terrible.
You're on today, Bob.
It has been terrible.
Well, you and Jamie were acolytes. I don't think you could build a series around that. That's
maybe just us racing the. See, when my brother and I were acolytes, mm-hmm. You know, I love my brother, but he wasn't exactly.
Having said
the
that,
it's true.
Having said that, yeah, right. Having said that, he wasn't exactly in the right. What's the word I'm looking for here? The mindset for a sermon and everything like that. He was very much business.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm here to light some candles, get some cookies, and get the truck out. You know, so when I would be acolyting with Jamie, he inevitably would bring out competitiveness in me, and he would try to light all his candles before I would light all my candles. And we're supposed to do it, like, to the song.
It's supposed to be somewhat reverential. Yeah. It looked like it was an Olympic sure. event.
Yeah, like, you know, we're racing around to the point where I would extend my wick way too long, and I would have, like, a...
Trying to stay away from that.
Yeah. So I would just have this giant flaming mass at the end of my thing,
and I was... Mixtape material,
just whipping
mixtape
it around,
gold there.
You know, igniting everything. So, yeah, I was doing that on purpose. But no, but seriously, like, we would race, and it would get borderline unsafe because I would... just a fireball at the end.
Motor skills, I love him dearly, but
my motor skills weren't very good. And Jamie,
of course, they improved dramatically because you're as far as dodgeball. I haven't seen a better dodgeball player than your son.
Leibs, you would have been really disappointed with me this go round. This.
Yeah, you were sorely missed. We didn't take home any medals this year.
We got knocked out in the semis of dodgeball. Well, I mean, we got robbed because Tanner
knocked out in the semis of bocce. That broke my heart.
Yeah, I got knocked out in the semis of bocce. Like, yeah, but we got robbed. We mm-hmm. got robbed. If Tanner was behind the board, he could weigh in. Tanner became our new MVP. Kid's got a hose. He could really throw it.
Another mixtape. Mixtape.
You're really on fire.
But I did have one excellent catch. I made the catch to win the game to get us into the semis. So that was good. But we needed you. Because Leibs,
you guys didn't win dodgeball when he was there, did you?
No, we lost in the championship.
We should have won. Your son kind of let me down a little bit.
Yeah.
But
wow. It was 1v1. I got caught right on the toe. I was battling some cramps. Yeah,
you were the only one left?
Yeah, it was one.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, it was one versus
I never
one
heard that.
Against the guy from Texas
I took
Texas
one for the
Roadhouse.
Team, too. Yeah, Texas Roadhouse was
Texas
the...
Texas Roadhouse.
What, did you get it in the face? What do you mean?
I wouldn't... No, I took one... Like, I was able to take out one of their players, but I allowed that, so it would be one-on-one.
Yourself,
because
right.
I think it was like a 12-year-old that took out Nikki.
Oh, now it's getting worse.
Okay, no, it wasn't. He was an adult. But he got me right on my giant, big-ass feet. You know, he got me right on the toe.
Flintstone feet.
So, but the thing that Leibs was excellent at was he would shame people into basically, you know, admitting that they got hit. So we'd be playing, and he would hit a guy.
I worked the refs. That's all you could just say. I worked the officials.
He worked the officials. And the officials.
I thought you were going to say I was a really good dodgeball player, too.
No, you were a great dodgeball player. But
Thank you.
But one of the things, like one of your X factors, your je ne sais quoi, if you will, was your ability to work the officials. Because with the highest level of respect, a lot of these guys are volunteers. God bless them for being out there. But they have no... You know, I mean, they're just kind of going through the motions. Some.
But talk about the corporate games.
The corporate games.
People listening have no earthly idea what's going on.
No, we're talking about the corporate games. So when we were playing,
well,
Tanner,
I think I said to the official, I don't mean to, I'll let you finish. I said, I was screaming, "It's rule 6, paragraph 5."
I think I
line
can,
3.
I
he's out, and then I Jedi mind tricked, and they were out.
And then Leibs would point at the guy, and be like, "Look, he knows he's out. You're out. Like, go ahead, leave. You know you're out. You know you're out.
And
you
know they'd walk off."
And the guy would be like, "Yeah, okay, yeah."
Well, if he walked off, then he must have really been hit. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this guy that we were playing,
off,
we needed Leibs because this guy
was getting hit. Not
this guy got hit 3 times by Tanner. To the point where the other teams, one of them being Texas Roadhouse, were watching and they were doing the little tip motion. He got tipped. He's out. And we were turning to the referees. Referees didn't want to say a damn thing. They didn't say if he was in or out one way or the other. They just were mute. And the other referees from the other court, we asked them, was like, you saw he's out, right? And they were kind of just like, they didn't want to bury the other officials.
Disappointed.
But this is where we needed Leibs. We needed Leibs to shout down the other team, because the other team's like, no, he's not. He's in. He's definitely in. And we needed a Leibs to be like, you're out. You know you're out. Go sit down. And so that's we needed a Leibs to work the officials.
Disappointed in the entire sportsmanship atmosphere of the event.
Oh, yeah. No, we got screwed. But they lost in the championship game.
You were talking about the Acolyte.
Yeah. So the Acolyte. Thank you. The Acolyte evidently is terrible. And without losing your interest, they introduced something that completely made something else in Star Wars completely irrelevant. So picture a movie you really like.
Midnight Run.
Sailor's Night Out, Boys Will Be Boys.
Debbie Does Dallas.
No,
yeah, I know.
No. The Sting. I love The Sting.
Okay, so what if
just glossed
they made,
over Midnight Run?
Also very good.
They made a
but I've
prequel,
only seen Midnight Run once. I've seen The Sting 25 times.
They made a prequel to The Sting, and it completely nullified and completely erased a major aspect of The Sting storyline. It's been a while since I've seen The Sting, so I'm trying to come up with an example of it.
Redford and Newman put together an extensive con to recon a guy that did harm to one of their friends. I don't know.
Yeah, so what if they made a movie, a prequel, that completely explained away the con or something along those lines? You'd be a little pissed off about it.
Sure.
You'd be like, okay, what's the point now? What's the point now of watching this thing? You know, when this happened in the past. That's kind of what the Acolyte has done. They basically made it so that Anakin Skywalker, the chosen one.
The girl who does the show with Strebel?
No, that's Anna Tarullo. We've talked about this. She is not a Jedi. The Force is strong with Anna, but no, she's not a Jedi. So they basically, correct me if I'm wrong, now there's
you both have seen it?
I haven't seen it.
And it sucks?
Yes.
Okay.
They've made it so that there's evidently...
This is a movie or a TV
series? A TV series. There's lesbian, witches that somehow...
What's not to
give,
like?
No, I know. It's on paper. Why not? But that give birth to Anakin Skywalker's, basically. So Anakin Skywalker, the chosen one, isn't the chosen one anymore. So
this is commonplace now. Like, it was supposed to be the only... It's like a Immaculate Conception type thing. How Anakin... It was... Biblical as far as that stuff goes, and now it's kind of like, well, it can happen anywhere.
Anywhere.
So, and it's got everybody up in arms, and nobody likes it. And it's the first delving into, a prequel of the Star Wars. So it's a whole new universe, and it's their first time dipping their toe into this universe, and they're absolutely just peeing down their leg, from what I've heard. Now, is that a fair, as a guy who's never seen it before?
It's fair.
I'm just going off of what you and Sofaro and all my Star Wars friends have said, but they're ruining Star Wars now, and people are very upset.
Even those things weren't even the biggest factors for me. It's just the writing, the set design, the whole script. It's not.
Aren't these the people that just did Baby Yoda? Didn't that make a big, gigantic splash in the country?
It's not the same, though. It was Dave Filoni who's basically taken over for George Lucas, but this was somebody else's baby, for lack of a better term, and she put this together, and it just hasn't worked.
Three episodes? Four episodes?
Three. I think the fourth one came out today.
I did not know that Leibs was coming, but boy, what timing. I have found something that will float your boat. I'm reading a book right now. It's fun.
Something else I want to talk
downloaded
to you about
on too. Kindle. Yes, no, sir. The Leibs will love this. It'll be probably more than you. The book is called...
you know how much I love to read.
What's called Surely You Can't Be Serious. It's the story of the movie Airplane.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? That's awesome.
It is. The book is as funny as the movie. The two guys that put it together, David Zucker, Jerry Zucker, and I guess it was another guy too, Jim Abrams. This is the first movie they ever did.
Mm-hmm.
And they had been dreaming of this thing for years. They put together, they were part of a comedy group called Kentucky Fried Movie. That was,
yeah, I've
they
heard
did
of them.
That. They tell how that story came up. But here's the one that'll blow your mind. This is movie studio-dom at its best. They have the script. They're trying to put a cast together. They're visiting people. For the people who never saw the movie, the two leads are a guy named Robert Hayes and Julie Haggerty?
Julie Haggerty.
Okay. Mm-hmm. They took him a long time to cast them because it's very weird. You have to be able to play the role looking like you're trying to do it seriously in order for it to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
I met Julie Haggerty. There's another name drop. And she absolutely talks exactly like that in real life. How she is in the movie, so it's even funnier when they put her in the movie. I digress. They're having trouble casting. They get a note from the studio. If I gave you 1,000 guesses who the studio wanted to be the lead in Airplane, I promise you, you wouldn't get it.
Meryl Streep.
No, on the male lead.
Oh, the male lead.
Yes.
Dustin Hoffman.
Robert Redford.
Those guys are way more logical than this guy. Ready? Here it comes. Here's the dropping of the bomb. And they're dead serious about
it. Orson Welles.
Barry Manilow. Told you you'd love that story.
And I'm the getting two that of them, book immediately.
The two of them looked at each other, and keep in mind, they need help. They're not giants in the industry. Mm. This is their first movie. So they're like, what the hell are we going to do? So they played that to their advantage. They got a mutual friend who was on their side who understood that Barry Manilow, as the lead in that, would be the worst casting in the history of movies. They got them to call his agent and say, you know, and keep in mind, in fairness, Manilow was at the top of the recording charts. He was the pop stars in that era. They said, you realize this is their first, these two guys, movie, it's their first movie. And they said, well, yeah, but they're going to have accomplished directors. They said, no, they're directing it. What? Yeah, and they're co-directing it. The two of them are going to be co-directors. And he said, it's their first movie, and they're co-directing it. We'll get back to you. And they never heard from him again. So they went to the studio and said, yeah, sorry, his agent turned it down. We're going to have to keep looking.
Wow.
They said our careers would have been over in one movie if we trotted this thing out with Barry Manilow as the pilot. Oh, my God.
That's wild that would even be.
Makes you wonder sometimes how they get in position of authority. How stupid must you be to think he would be good in that role?
So I was watching the Gene Wilder special. It's on Netflix. Tremendous. It's his life.
I saw a snippet of it.
So good. And during the making of The Producers, the studio wanted them to replace Gene Wilder as the accountant. And they were like, and Mel Brooks kept saying, yeah, whatever you want. And he just kept filming.
Keep saying yes, but
right. And so halfway through, they're like, "Oh, it's too expensive to replace him now." Oh, sorry. And he kept him because he wanted him for the role.
Nice.
But like the studio's like, "No, he's not. And they were talking about like these big time actors. When you need someone like Gene Wilder, who's funny and who can play it with body language, a lot of things. Yep. And he's obviously one of the best of all time. But it's crazy because Mel Brooks could see it, but the studio couldn't.
In that same show. He tells the story, and I'm sorry, don't yell at me. I never saw Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Well, wait, the classic?
And he's out of here. There he goes. And he's but the fact that you guys have will probably
know they've remade it twice. Okay, in the last,
this is
like,
the one with
years.
Gene Wilder.
Okay, the classic.
And he is the scene. You guys will know the scene, I guess. He comes out hobbling with a cane.
It's when you're first introduced to Willy Wonka.
And then he pushed the cane aside, does a somersault, and bounces up.
Right.
And he told them that he thought he made that up. That was not in the script. And he said, this is how I want to do it. And they said, well, that doesn't make any sense. Don't do that. He said, yes, it does make sense. And they said, well, you can't do it. He said, well, I'll tell you what. If you don't let me do that scene that way, I'm out of the movie. And they said, what are you talking about? He said, just trust me. That scene has to be done that way. Now, not having seen it, I don't know if it had the impact he said. But he said that was important to him. Because it had to put in your mind, is he really telling the truth or is he full of crap?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That's how he did it without any words. He came out and he's hobbled, then he bounces, he does a somersault, then he hops up.
Ta-da.
And he also, and this sounds a little cruel, there's a scene at the end where he gets very mad and he yells, okay?
Told the sound, you get nothing. Good day, sir.
He told the sound man that, listen, I'm just giving you a heads up because I don't want to blow the microphone out. Because the kid in the scene with him, he didn't tell. So he said, I really want to scare the crap out of him. I want you to get that reaction. Because he said, and I don't know if he actually cried, but he got pretty close. And he said, that's exactly the reaction I wanted. That's a little bit mean.
Well, when you watch the special, he has about 5 or 6 of those things in the movie that he just did. It was reactionary for the cast, which they love, but they said he was the kindest, greatest guy.
That's
but like,
weirdness.
And so he would do all that. And if you've ever seen the movie Young Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah. That I have seen.
So,
Right.
So that Mel Brooks was absolutely positive. Said, no, you're not doing that. You're ruining the movie. You're not. That was his idea. Putting on the Ritz was all him.
Really?
All
That's
him.
The most famous scene from the
and
movie.
And so Mel Brooks said, you're going to ruin the movie with this because we paid homage to the classic. We don't want to go off script as far as that goes. And then Mel Brooks saw it and said,
keep it.
It's, if we don't have that in the movie, it's not the same movie. And so it was all Gene Wilder, the putting on the Ritz, had nothing to do with really? Anybody
that's
else. That, he came up with it. He wrote
that's
it.
Amazing.
He wrote it.
That's a genius scene. It's hilarious.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's fantastic. That special is really cool.
I didn't
but,
realize
yeah.
Gene Wilder was in so many Mel Brooks movies. I mean, yeah, Blazing Saddles. He's in Young Frankenstein.
He's in Blazing Saddles?
Yeah.
He's
the star.
Yeah, that's the,
right. Yeah,
he's the kid.
Waco Kid.
Waco Kid,
yeah. And what's the the African American guy's name?
The sheriff, yeah. I
What's
can't
his
remember
name?
His name.
The actor.
I know, I'm drawing a blank.
Oh, man. Stupidly, and don't get mad at me, I want to say Eldridge Cleaver, who was a civil rights activist. I know that's not it, but it's something like that. It's like a lob.
Blazing Saddles.
Oh, God bless America.
And with that, the V Show wishes everyone a happy Juneteenth.
No, but what the cast here, Spinning's House cast is
yes,
Cleavon Little.
Cleavon Little.
CLC, yeah, Cleavon.
No,
Cleaver,
it sounded,
Cleavon.
No, that's,
come
that's
on,
fair. That sounded, yeah.
Yeah, Cleavon Little.
Which one's the best? What is the best Mel Brooks movie?
I'd say Young Frankenstein for me. There's a bunch, but to me that movie is
It's a photo finish between,
and that's a combination because Spaceballs is great. He only like Gene Wilder wrote Young Frankenstein.
Oh, that I didn't know.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Really,
But he wanted Mel Brooks to direct it.
Let's see what the highest rated on Rotten Tomatoes is. Blazing Saddles is 89%.
Life Stinks, The Vagrant. Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Oh, I forgot about Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Yeah,
that's The Fly.
I love that movie.
Oh, High Anxiety.
High
was
Anxiety
very good too. That was very funny.
Yeah,
History of the World.
History of the World was amazing.
That's very good. Wow, he did so many movies.
He's still going strong, Mel Brooks. He's 97, and you listen to him in the show.
Sharp in interviews.
Sharp as can be.
Yeah, good for him.
I don't, you know, you can never make Blazing Saddles right now, which is kind of a shame. But that may be his best work of all, probably, is not even a movie. It's the audio stuff he did with Carl Reiner, the 2,000-year-old man. Oh,
really?
If you've never heard those, go listen to those. These are things that they would just do at parties, back, you know, showbiz parties. They would stand up, and the premise is Carl Reiner is interviewing Mel Brooks, who's a 2,000-year-old man. And he is talking about all these incidents in history that Mel Brooks is improvising. It's all improv. And it's so funny. They said, you got to make an album of this stuff. And they did. They made it as a nightclub act, and it became a massive, massive hit. But you go check it out. You can find it on YouTube. It's hilarious.
All right. So according to Rotten Tomatoes, the highest rated movies that Mel Brooks has with a 100%, Ronnie's. Never heard of it.
I haven't either.
Ronnie's, what the hell is that?
I don't know, but I guess he was in it or something. The 12 Chairs.
Oh, the 12 Chairs was pretty good. Did you ever see that?
I have not.
Not bad. Dom DeLuise, very funny.
93%. The Muppet Movie, 89%.
What did he have to do with the Muppet Movie?
I don't know. I guess he was a writer on it or something. Blazing Saddles, 89%. Silent Movie, 82%.
I don't remember that.
High Anxiety, 75%.
So Blazing Saddles doesn't get a high rating?
No, Blazing Saddles was 89.
Oh,
it had the highest. Yeah. History of the World, Part 1, 63%.
Go higher than that.
And then 55% was To Be or Not to Be. He acted in that one.
Never saw that either.
But I'm very surprised. I don't see Spaceballs or Young Frankenstein.
Well, because I'm wondering, these lists, because I'm doing the same thing. Some he produced, some he just directed, some he wrote. Like, he wrote all the songs of the producers, which is Springtime for Hitler.
Right.
Come on, that's genius. But so my guess is you're looking at a list of just ones that he produced.
I think that's
just
what
ones
it is.
That he starred
because he directed,
maybe?
He directed Young Frankenstein, but Gene Wilder was the one who wrote, it. So maybe that's why. Maybe these are the ones he actually wrote or produced or whatnot.
See, see, this is weird. I'm getting different rankings. This is Mel Brooks' movies ranked on Rotten Tomatoes. Number one, Young Frankenstein, 94%. Number two,
right,
The Producers, 91%.
I was going to say Young Frankenstein's got to be
this
in the
90s. This is the better list, yeah. Blazing Saddles, 89%. 12 Chairs, 93%.
Underrated movie.
Silent Movie, 82%.
Good.
High Anxiety, 75%. History of the World, Part 1, 63%. Spaceballs, not certified fresh. Only 52%.
But that, I'm not a big fan of Spaceballs.
I didn't love Spaceballs either.
Robin Hood, Men in Tights, which I loved as a kid.
That's a good one.
Not certified fresh either, 42%. Yeah. Life Stinks, 21%. Dracula, Dead and Loving It, which I actually really like that too, got an 11%.
To each their own.
To each their own. I actually really like Dead and Loving It. Maybe it's because I had a crush on the female lead, but... I thought that one was pretty funny. It wasn't as good as Young Frankenstein or Blazing Saddles, but it was still pretty good. Better than 11%.
Marty Feldman on Young Frankenstein working with Mel Brooks. He's on with Johnny Carson. This may be an interview I have to watch later. Marty Feldman, I don't know, so many people listening probably don't even remember who he is now. He had whatever that medical condition
bulging,
was.
Yeah, the eyes.
Where one was looking to the right, one was looking to the
left.
And
yeah.
He was hilarious.
Emery was watching the special with me. And she's like, "Who's that? Like, is that real?" I said, "Yes." And he's really, really funny.
He's really good.
I think I know who you're talking about.
You don't
know who Marty Feldman is either.
Trust me. I think I know.
Young Frankenstein. He was Igor.
Yeah, that's exactly who I was going to guess.
And he goes, "It was so great in the movie." He's like, "You know what? I'm a surgeon. I can help you with that hump." And Marty Feldman was like, "What hump?" It's
like great. Marty Feldman is that guy right there.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Unbelievable. All right, brother. I'm told you must leave at the bottom of the hour, so we will let you go. It was great seeing you again.
It's been
too long. Don't be a stranger. Stop in. Bring some Entenmann's next time you come.
Is Entenmann's...
Need to eat. Your skin and bones.
5 second hot take.
Okay.
5 second hot take.
5 second hot take.
Is Entenmann's coffee cake... And then nothing else, really? Like
they're in a category? Well, coffee cake or the crumb cake?
The crumb cake.
Crumb cake.
That's different.
It's a different ballgame.
But I'm saying, like, Entenmann's has a whole brand of everything.
Yes, but Entenmann's
But it's basically just the crumb cake.
And they had the black and white.
Yeah,
and
everything but Entenmann's crumb cake. No, like, I don't know what you mean. Entenmann's crumb cake is so much better than almost any other national chain cake. But if you're talking about relative to their other products are great, too.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's why I think it's a hot take. I feel like Entenmann's is basically, just crumb cake.
No.
The crumb cake is god tier.
No.
But the rest of their stuff,
the rest of their stuff is very good.
They have okay donuts.
They've got the black and white that you mentioned.
See, I don't know if I've ever had their black and white. Maybe that could be why
I'm
saying this.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Like, I like Entenmann's. I'll never say no to Entenmann's. And their crumb cake, like I said, I would put that up against any cake.
No. I mean,
I kind of feel like they're just they're riding the crumb cake too
Entenmann's,
much.
Entenmann's, oh, no.
They don't have enough.
It's like saying Nathan's riding the hot dog too much. I mean, it's legendary.
Yeah, but
it's
I don't know if they have really anything else.
They do.
So, like, White Castle has chicken rings. You know?
Yeah, that's what people are always saying. Like, let's go to White Castle and get chicken rings.
Oh, I'm just saying.
Let's go to Nathan's
Speaking of Nathan's, isn't Joey Chestnut not competing because of the
ridiculous.
Plant-based?
No. ML, Major League Eating.
What is that?
Can't stay out of their own trucking way. First off, you're not the NFL. You're not that big. Joey Chestnut very much is
iconic.
Bigger than your sport. Before that, Takeru Kobayashi was bigger than your sport. You want to know how I know this?
How do you
because
know that?
MLE, if I say MLE to you guys, you don't know what MLE
spit-take.
Is.
Your dad just did a spit take.
Had to fight it off with both
of us. No one knows what Major League Eating is except idiots who follow it like me and know the rankings.
Right.
But you know who Joey Chestnut is. You know who Takeru Kobayashi is. And they're not letting these people compete because of some sort of like endorsement stuff. It's dumb to me. Like, now, I did hear... that Joey Chestnut was being a little inflexible about the whole thing. I can understand it's sponsored
by
Nathan's.
He's got 1.2 million reasons why not to be flexible, though. So I
exactly. But
that's what the fake hot dog people are giving him, $1.2 million?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it inflexible?
Is it inflexible? Well, I don't know. I just heard that he was being, he wasn't really budging on the whole.
No, I'm just even talking about thing. Like, and I'm not, I don't know myself. Like, is that a word?
I don't know. Inflexible, yeah, unflexible,
inflexible, or
he was being rather turgid.
Your dad is
adamant about that.
Yes,
it's inflexible.
But I'm saying though, this is twice now they've run off their biggest stars due to endorsement stuff.
Inflexible is someone unwilling to change or compromise.
Job, Nikki.
We were robbed.
I wasn't questioning. I was just.
It sounded weird. I know some words sound weird.
Yeah, right. I had a whole debate the other day.
In this part of the country, and it drives me crazy, although it's become, I'm finding out, a colloquialism that's accepted. The past tense of drag is dragged, not drug. Drug is something that you get at the pharmacy. But it has been so used in society that now.
I corrected Emery on that just a week ago.
I can't stand when I hear that.
Yeah, I say that a little bit too much.
Drug him in. You say drug?
I say drug.
I don't.
Yeah.
Oh, dear God.
Sorry. Sorry to disappoint
you. It's okay.
This is why Jamie's the favorite. But
drugs. Oh, my God. You sound like Dizzy Dean when you talk like that.
You said you had something else to ask me?
Boys. Are you watching Boys season 4?
Of course.
Loving it.
That's the best.
The centipede scene was
incredible.
It seems every season, episode 2 of the season, they have some sort of shock and awe scene.
And what's the, I can't believe this, I forgot his name.
Was it episode 2?
Bob.
The guy who was on Walking Dead.
Oh, Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
I love Jeffrey Dean Morgan. And anything he does.
I loved him as he played the comedian
in Watchmen, perfectly. In the original Watchmen.
I was lucky enough to have gotten my hands on the comic book and read it before mm-hmm. the movie came out. So I actually knew what the hell was going on. But he was exactly who I pictured the comedian to be. Like, he was perfect in that. He was great as Negan in The Walking Dead.
He was. His character arc and just everything. He captures your attention. It's surprising. I guess he could have been bigger, but, like, he's got the it factor.
He has that quiet it factor.
Yes.
Almost. Like, he steals every scene he's in The Boys.
Yes, he does.
And he's playing, like, this chill, you know, CIA operative. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Here's the question. Do you think Pops would like The Boys? Because it's cringy. There's some cringy scenes. But
I think, like, in Godfather Part 2, when Don Finucci was walking through the streets of the festival and saw a puppet fight and goes, this is just too violent for me, in Italian, and keeps walking, I think that's what your dad would say about The Boys.
The social commentary is hilarious because they make fun of all sides.
Everything.
They make fun of the right, the left.
But
they
violence is over the top.
And some of the sexual scenes are a little...
That's over the top, too.
A little over the top, too. Just, they're superheroes, so...
Involving sea creatures.
Are they still doing
with the whale where they drive into the whale?
Are they still doing the bear, or is that done?
Oh, it's coming out soon. Soon, like a few weeks.
Tasty.
Are you up to date on the bear?
I think so, but I'm not sure. I'll have to go back and check my notes.
Okay. You've already. I gave you a pass. I'm not even sure if I gave you a pass on Willy Wonka, but finish The Bear, please. Okay, I'm not going to give you a pass on that.
I think I have. I'm watching a show that you would. Neither one of you will love, but I am hooked on it. It's potato chips of television. Australian TV. I'm infatuated by. I love.
You love Bluey.
Not Bluey. Although I do love Bluey. It's an adult soap opera, essentially, but it's got more meat to it than a soap opera. Forgive me for assuming certain things, but I know you have some Jewish ancestry, whatever your particular vent is right now. They deal with it's set in 1953.
Okay.
And the lead character is a woman who converted to Judaism because her husband, who she fell in love with in Paris,
mm-hmm.
and she is captured and kept at a concentration camp for 2 years. And the things she has to do to survive it are unspeakable. She gets out. She thinks her husband's dead. She reunites with him. It deals with racism, the Aboriginal people in Australia. It deals with homosexuality. But it covers it all. It's all on steroids. I mean, the kinds of things that go in their family are off the chart.
Sure.
But you can't put it down. It's taken the first bite of the potato chip out of the bag, and I'm watching it. Lasted 5 seasons. I'm on season 5, and that's all I've been watching for the last week.
Okay.
And I can't go to bed at night because it's like when one ends, you got to be like, it's like when we used to watch Mad Men. Mm-hmm. You just can't stop watching. Sure. You just got to watch the next episode. So if ever you're inclined, I'd give it a try. You might be intrigued, but I don't think it's not your you're into Marvel and
I have boys. Eclectic taste with everything. Yeah, you know that.
This is
come on now.
Weebs dabbles.
This is I love as The Crown. Good an example I love all of those genre yeah. as you'd find. It's usually not my thing. Like I never watched Dynasty or Dallas.
That's stereotyping me.
But you know you're
check out Mr. In Between. It's another Australian show on Hulu.
Yeah, you've really? Been you, he's mentioned love this one what's before. That about? Mr. In Between. Just
it's about he's like a good guy, and he's a father. He's a hitman, and he works. But he's an engaging character.
I would be interested.
And it's really a really good show. So yeah,
very cool.
Okay,
try if you got nothing to do one day, a place to call home. Great, but it's literally the hardest I've ever laughed. I was trying to find the scene. That's what I was doing while you were talking, and I can't find it. We have to find the episode and play it out of the episode. It's the hardest I've ever laughed. At watching it at a moment in a TV show, probably in the last 5 years, and I can't tell you what it is that's funny because I'd ruin the scene. So I'll have to find it for you and play it for you. But it is a brilliant bit of writing. It's just hilarious, very very funny. They deal with really tough things. This you know, it's this the one character is a very smart, pretty young woman, and she's dealing with a guy who's an absolute pig. The guy's already raped her mother, although she doesn't know that, and so she's. Oh no, I'm sorry. It's a different guy she's dealing with. I forgot. I got my scenes mixed up. She's dealing with a publisher, and they're mad at him mm-hmm. her because she married an Italian guy. Keep in mind, 1953, they had just been fighting the Italians
sure.
seven, 8 years ago,
and we can be a lot to begin with. So,
but they throw every ethnic Italian slur. And as they do with her Judaism, they refer to her in very unflattering terms. They do. And she finally says to the guy, you know, that I guess you can say Dago without getting thrown off the air. That Dago you're referring to.
Well, I guess we can.
It's my husband.
You two can.
It's my husband. And so he goes on, he doubles down on it. He tries even more offensive stuff. So I won't tell you what she says after that, but it is. I promise you, especially I think if you're an Italian American, you'll fall out of your chair laughing. It's very funny. I got to find this scene. That's all I'll tell you. So I don't want to ruin it.
Okay,
it's that good. I don't want to ruin it. I could tell
what's
you.
What's the name of this again? This,
a place
this,
to call
a place
home.
To call home. That's right. That's right.
I could tell you what she said and you'd laugh. But if you watched it, I said to your mother and I braced her for it. I said this is going to make you fall out of the chair laughing. And it came on.
And she fell out of the chair.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Did I'll you check it out.
Have you finished Our Only Murderers in the Building?
No.
I'm
still watching that, too.
Okay. Because
I'm getting too many sub-reference now. I haven't finished Bluey yet, either. And I want to catch up on all the Blueys.
I want to catch up on
oh,
Bluey.
Oh, I do.
No, I know you do.
You'll never get Rusty out. I'm telling you, that's one of the great episodes of all time.
Oh, it's great. No, that
the cricket
that'll make
players
you cry.
In Australia get teared up when they watch it. That's how cool it is.
It is a very good episode. But have you watched Only Murders in the Building?
Uh-huh.
What'd you think of that?
I enjoy it.
Enjoy it?
Yeah.
He's
they're
two seasons
town,
in.
You know.
They are in
Steve
September.
Martin, and,
Martin Short.
Martin Short yep. coming to town. As our Grand Funk Railroad in October. Don't know why I threw that in, but I just learned
it's good to know.
You know who they are.
Some non sequiturs. It's
they're
fine.
An American band.
I've heard that about yeah. them.
There you go. All right, buddy. Good luck to you. Enjoy your – when are you leaving?
We're leaving on Monday.
I'm leaving on Sunday. Ain't that a kick in the shorts? Mm-hmm. We'll both be in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
That goofy, crazy, wacky state that is Florida.
Yes. I was going to ask you to fill in with me with Pops Out, but that's okay. I get to play with Jeff Lightsey again, I think.
Jeff's the best.
Hopefully. I love Jeff. I mm-hmm. love Jeff.
Yeah. You don't have to actually kneel down when you do a show, do you?
Let me talk about
we call it the Victory Formation show. I don't know.
He doesn't actually take Victory Formation.
Honestly, I think he stands up the whole time too.
He does, really?
I'm like not even kidding. Yeah, like
well, he's one of those guys.
Yeah.
Does the show standing?
He gets excited.
All right,
at first I thought he just had to poop, but no,
ridiculously
I think he just gets
late breaks yet again. Oh, should we give
Summer Leaves, Radio baby?
Should we give Leaves the whole treatment?
Well, I don't know. He probably has places to go.
Yeah, but he would enjoy this.
I would.
Yeah, I think so.
Making a whole lot of assumptions.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, hold on. Hang on. You can leave while we're doing it, but I think we need to set it up.
No, I will.
The setup is great. I love the setup.
I'll stay for the setup.
No, me. No, you pick a bad one. I don't like yours.
Pick a bad one.
I like that siren.
I don't.
That's a good siren.
Here we go. Let's go. Let's see. This is, ladies and gentlemen.
I'll fill the space. Thanks for having me on.
Is that you? No, it's me.
That was mine.
Oh. Okay.
Which one's yours? Oh, there you go.
There it is. That's the one I like. Yours is too subdued. Ladies and gentlemen, that can mean only one thing. It is time for another Universal Windows Direct live read. Read. That's how we announce it. Oh, yeah. The advertisers love when you do that. All right. So that's what we're doing. That was for you, for your benefit. You know, it's pretty warm. All right. Calm down back there.
It's still going.
It's pretty warm out there. It's going to be, what is it, 90-something right now?
It's a hot one.
Yeah. Oh, it's toasty.
And it's going to stay hot for the foreseeable future, and then it's going to get really cold in the winter, and you don't want to suffer with an uncomfortable home. Too cold in the winter, too hot in the summer, and too noisy all year round. What do you need? You need new windows for my guys at Universal Windows Direct. Super spacer technology is what's the key. Helps keep the edge of the glass seal better. The windows last longer, and they up to 5 times longer than other window systems. Plus, Universal backs it all up with a lifetime warranty for as long as you own your home and 20 years to the next homeowner. Call Universal Windows Direct today and get a free home estimate at 502-487-5099. And for every 2 windows you buy, you'll get 2 free. Buy 4, get 2. Buy 4, get 4. Buy 8, get 8. You get the idea. No limit. And you can use somebody else's money. What do I mean by that? Well, it is 5 years, 60 months, interest-free financing. So you got great windows that'll last and last, keep your home comfortable, keep your utility bills down. You can get it with 5 years interest-free financing and have a deal where you buy 2, get 2 free. That, my friends, is an unbeatable combination. But you can only get it started if you call them at 502-487-5099. Schedule your free in-home estimate today, and they will take care of you at Universal Windows Direct. Tell them Mike told you to call. Tell them Leibs told you to call, and you'll get an additional $250 off your project. For the last windows you'll ever need, go to uwd.com. Like me, you'll be saying, I love my windows.
Thank you, John Sterling.
My homage to John Sterling. Take a break. ESPN 680-1057.